Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
They're lucky to get that loose ball. Gibbs with the thrust. Robert Jones nicely out to Emir Lewis. Emir Lewis's check it up goes Yayan Evans is away. Can the Welsh captain make it? He's going to do it. And it's a try for Wales. And the Welsh captain has scored his 8th and his 33rd.
Welcome to another episode of the Attacking Scrum podcast, and what a show we have got lined up for you this evening. As we record this, we have a very special guest joining us. The Scarlets Executive Chairman, Simon Mudarak, will be with us, which is very, very exciting indeed. I'm also joined by good friend of the show and top journalist, Stefan Thomas, to look back on a really exciting weekend of rugby. And that's something we haven't been able to say for a little while. So certainly looking forward to doing that. And we have got stacks and stacks and stacks of listeners' questions to get stuck into. So myself and Steph will be doing that in the second half of the show. Regular listeners, of course, will know this is the point where I usually thank our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. But seeing as Scott Otten was responsible for the Dragons' demise last night, I don't really feel like doing that, but I won't hold it against him. If you want to get some top quality coffee, you can do that by going to socoffeetrades.co.uk. Right, on with the show. And as I said there in the intro, delighted to welcome to the show Simon Mudarak, Executive Chairman of the Scarlets. Simon, good evening. Great to speak to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Jed. Likewise.
Yeah, it's great to have you with us. And yeah, going to start obviously by addressing last night's game. Tough loss last night, but how do you assess that game and I guess the season so far?
So disappointing. I mean, clearly, you know, the Blues had a reaction to what's been going on, you know, with them this week. So, you know, fair play to them and, you know, well done. They definitely were up for it and, you know, really, really wanted the win. It's a great stadium to go to. So I enjoyed that part of the experience. You know, clearly disappointed with the outcome. We probably didn't start off with the intensity that I would have hoped for. And then, you know, clearly there were a couple of incidents in the game, which I don't disagree with. You know, that caused us to lose a couple of guys. You know, Liam, obviously, for, you know, the latter part of the game. We did come back into it. You know, clearly we came out after the half with a higher degree of intensity and, you know, snuck the lead. And I thought we might actually hang in there and get the victory. But it was not to be. And, you know, all credit to the Blues. You know, fantastic for them to, you know, get the victory after, as I said earlier, you know, very difficult week off the pitch.
How much of a turning point was that sending off, do you think?
I'd like to think there were other things we could have done in the game. You know, I'm not going to hang Liam out to dry. You know, he hasn't played for us, you know, for quite some time. And clearly, you know, we really wanted to, you know, make a contribution for the Scarlets as well as for himself. You know, arguably, you know, we would have snuck it. But I think, you know, there were enough things that we could have done that we could have controlled where we still could have snuck the game, which is not to take anything away from the Blues. You know, I thought they, you know, they played with a high degree of intensity and, you know, there were some great performances amongst their squad. on the evening. But we just didn't quite do enough.
It was perhaps a slightly slow start to the season, but certainly results in the lead up to Christmas and over the festive period have been really good. Is that certainly cause for optimism within Parker Scarlets?
Yeah, you have to think so. Certainly, we're disappointed. I mean, if you look at the games leading up to Christmas, the only game where we really, were well and truly beaten was the Glasgow game. I think outside of that, it was very, very close. And we were playing, with quite a young squad at times. I think, two things or three things maybe that have impacted us. And these are not excuses, but it's just, a function in terms of where we're at now. And, ideally, I'd like to think that going forward structurally, these are things that we can improve upon and work upon. But firstly, coming into the season, it was quite a lot of injuries. I think at one point in time, 20 players were on the injured list, which is, significant for any squad. A lot of players obviously tied up into the international squads. I think at one point, we were 17 players out on international duty. And clearly we do take a lot of pride in that, as a club. But, the reality is that also has a massive impact in terms of your on-field performance. And then due to COVID, even less flexibility or the inability to provide flexibility around player release. So even the boys that weren't playing regularly, particularly for Wales, that they weren't able to play for us. I mean, I think the standout example in terms of the impact there, if you look at the game where we played at Edinburgh at home, where we lost by a point or two, Edinburgh had the benefit of four international squad members being released back into their 15 for that game, whereas we had none. So that has a massive impact. So, again, it's a set of excuses, but if you bundle those things together, that would have had an impact to any squad on the planet.
I also think we managed to get through 5 minutes of the show without mentioning COVID, which is probably a record for the last year or so. But you took over last summer, obviously a very, very difficult time to do that. How hard has it been to navigate the COVID crisis within that new role that you took on?
Coming into the role, COVID was underway. I first started my conversations with the club, back in March. COVID was bubbling up and clearly was going to be significant. But the impact and the extent of the impact, is far beyond realistically, I think, what most of us foresaw at the time. And still, we're working through, what is it going to be? Yes, we are rolling the vaccine out, but, clearly COVID is mutating and, the challenges continue. And, today, as we look at the numbers over the past week or so, I think, it's very difficult to foresee normality resuming for a number of months, if not well and truly into 2021. When I first came into the club, we had a plan to get through COVID on the basis that we would start to see meaningful crowds come into the game by now. That's obviously not happening. So we've had to replan, we've had to adapt, we've had to adjust. Which we continue to do on a weekly, on a daily, in some cases on an hourly basis. So it's a moving feast, but we're not alone. The entire game's been impacted and, certainly across all four regions, across all four professional clubs in Wales, as well as the community game and the international game, we're all in the same boat, trying to do the best to work through this as well as, society as a whole.
And you mentioned the other regions there. I mean, obviously things have been changing off the field for all the regions, certainly over the last couple of years. But there's been significant change just down the road at the Ospreys with some significant investment. Is that something that you think will continue across the regions? And obviously with your Scarlets hat on, is that something that is a viable option?
There's no doubt the game is changing. The game that we love is 150 years old. For 125 years, it was really a community game, run by community people, free of charge, essentially. For the last 25 years, the game has been professional, but really, particularly if you look at Wales, you look at the UK, you look at the British Isles and Europe, you know, the game's really been supported by benefactors. We're now moving into a third cycle of, if you like, ownership, investment, support, which is institutional. And, you know, Y11 is a good example at a micro level, at a club level. CVC clearly, you know, has invested in Pro 14, has invested in PRL. You know, it's widely being discussed. You know, there's an investment from CVC on the table or being discussed, being finalized around Six Nations. You know, the game is changing and significant institutional cash, investment, shareholding is coming into the game. So undoubtedly, you know, we'll see more of that. As a Scarlets board, you know, we actually have a shareholder base of about 3,500 people. So it's pretty widespread. You know, we talk about, you know, being owned by the community and being part of the community. You know, clearly we have been heavily supported by benefactors, and, you know, some shareholders are clearly a lot more significant and larger than others, you know, but ultimately, you know, we run a sustainable business. You know, we don't talk about profit, we talk about surplus, and we invest whatever surplus we generate, you know, back into the club, back into our development pathways. You know, we take our role within the community, within society, and within the development of the game, you know, for the better good of our community and Wales as a whole. You know, we take that very, very seriously. Clearly, in order to be successful on the field and off the field, you know, you need to be prosperous. So we need to continue to find ways to be prosperous so that we can continue to be successful and continue to compete and, you know, continue to reinvest into the game.
And you mentioned CVC there, private investment is a world that you know very well yourself. Now, of course, investing in a game, if you are a VC or private investment, you want to see a significant return on that investment. How much do you think that CVC could really change the structure of the game as we know it?
Considerably. And, you know, I think arguably, you know, there are some structural changes that, you know, we as fans, you know, and we as a club, you know, would like to see, that it's going to take somebody like a CVC to help facilitate and drive through. And I think, you know, we need to go through that evolution. You know, realistically, I think, you know, the current setup in terms of private ownership has probably taken the game as far as it can be taken. You know, and the problem you've got with benefactors, you know, you've got the 3 Ds, you know, you've got death, divorce, and death. So, you know, you need longer term visibility over, you know, how the game is going to be supported. And also the game needs to become self-sustaining. You know, the benefactor model is not supportable in perpetuity. So the ability for the game to generate, you know, sources of revenue, sources of income that are market driven, that allow the game to be sustainable and allow the game to grow is crucial. And I think we're now entering a phase where, you know, that'll become the reality.
And, you know, I think it's safe to say that change has begun, particularly if you look within the Pro 14. You had the announcement of the Rainbow Cup just before Christmas. Whether or not, you know, that feels a long way off at the moment, just given where the world is right now. But how excited are you about the prospect of, you know, the likes of the Sharks and the Stormers being involved, I guess, in a regular basis, should the league go down that route?
Yeah, I mean, I'm optimistic in terms of, you know, really once we're able to, you know, pull the jigsaw puzzle together across an entire season, which, you know, hopefully will be next season, the inclusion of those teams will be very, very positive. You know, this year it is a bit of a hodgepodge. It's not ideal. I don't think anyone would, you know, pretend that that's the case. But the inclusion of those teams does give some spice to the end of the season, you know, particularly as a curtain raiser to the Lions Tour. Now, I've just talked about, you know, two things that, you know, clearly, you know, the world in general, you know, we're going to control, you know, way beyond us or the league. And that is, you know, the ability of those South African teams to play in our league physically this season and also, you know, whether the Lions tour is going to go ahead or not and in what shape that's going to be. But if you park that for now, the inclusion of those teams does add some spice. And, you know, I've been told I wasn't around at the time, but, you know, when the previous two South African teams, you know, came into the league, you know, there was a great deal of excitement and interest in their inclusion. And I think, you know, the first home game the Scarlets had, which was against the Cheetahs, I believe, you know, we had 10,500 people, you know, show up to watch that game. So clearly, you know, there's an appetite to see something new. There's no doubt that these four teams are incredibly strong. If we get it right, it will greatly strengthen the quality of the league. And I think, you know, that will enable the value of Pro 16, you know, to elevate itself. Because, you know, undoubtedly the value and, you know, these numbers are in the public domain, but, you know, if you look at the value of a league in terms of, you know, what the media rights are worth, you can see what they get in France, you can see what they get in England, and you can see, you know, what we currently get for, you know, what was Pro 14 rugby. So we've got a job to do to grow that value. And then I think as we grow that value and we come to, you know, more of a level of parity across the different leagues in the Northern Hemisphere, you know, then that opens up further opportunities. But, you know, job number one is to grow the quality and grow the value.
And yeah, I mean, you mentioned there the first, you know, the home game of the Scarlets getting 10,500. How confident are you that from a fan perspective, there will be the appetite both at your club and I guess across the other regions that, you know, like we said, it's very difficult to do at the moment because I think people would be desperate to see any kind of rugby live. But in the long term, are you confident that there is that desire to want to see these teams as part of the league and it will spike the interest?
So, if you look at the growth of sports in North America in particular, and when it went through its hockey stick almost, you know, curve of growth, that happened in the 1920s and 30s. And there is a theory that was directly linked to, you know, the bounce back or people's reaction to Spanish flu, which, you know, had a significant impact on the continent of North America. I think one of the things that, you know, people have discovered over the past, you know, 12 months is that, you know, material wealth and material goods is all well and good, but actually, you know, experiences and shared experiences is almost something that money can't buy. You know, is an incredibly important part of our human psyche. And, you know, I think, you know, people are craving to enjoy those experiences again. And, you know, there's an argument that, you know, they may want to, you know, focus more on those types of experiences than they did in the past. I think if we can deliver a better quality product, so more competitive, higher intensity games, you know, with more occasion, you know, more drama around them, you know, better production qualities and values, you know, even for, you know, online over TV consumption, you know, I have to believe that there's a market for that. I mean, I get contacted constantly by people, you know, a couple times a week, you know, long-time season ticket holders at the Scarlets who, you know, are desperate to, you know, for the club to take their money in anticipation of them being able to come back into the stadium. You know, when I was down at the Scarlets a couple of weeks before Christmas, you know, family pulled up to the ticket office to buy season tickets, car full of five people, a single family bubble, by the way. And they took, you know, and I said, you know, thank you for your support. Thank you for your continued support. They said, no, we're new. You know, we've never had a season ticket before. So they'd driven down to the park to buy a family season ticket, never having been a season ticket holder before, and with no visibility over when they were going to be able to come into the ground to actually see games. Now, you know, that's a very small example, but it is a representative example, you know, of, you know, how some people at least, you know, are feeling right now.
Well, yeah, I think it's a nice example, and you hope that there's more of those, there's more of those out there. Just, we touched on a couple of things that a couple of events that, as we say, are potentially in doubt at the moment. Unfortunately, we've got to kind of add the European Champions Cup to that, and in fact, all European rugby. If that is the case and fixtures are postponed, what will the plans be at the Scarlets? Will you be looking to fill those with friendlies, or will it be an opportunity for a bit of recovery time for players?
We would be keen to play. And we've spoken, I personally have only spoken to the Blues because I was with them last night face to face. So I did go to the ground and I did have the opportunity to interact with some of their directors. And we'd be keen to play. And look, if the worst thing that we could come up with for the next couple of weekends is a replay of, you know, those two games last night, I think people would be okay with that. You know, it's not ideal, it's not perfect, but if we could replicate that over the next couple of weekends, you know, to keep some entertainment on the telly, you know, to keep the boys ticking over, I think people would be pretty happy with that.
And just to change tact while we kind of finish here, we've spoken on this podcast a number of times about how recruitment has been something that the Scarlets have traditionally done very well over the last, you know, 5-10 years, really. How much harder has that been when the financial situation is kind of so unclear? Or is it, as you say, another example of everyone is in the same boat? We've got to kind of focus on what we're able to influence.
Yeah, I think it's been harder. We're a very, grounded club, which is not to say that others aren't. But, you know, we do take our obligations incredibly seriously. If we offer a contract out, you know, we want that contract to be, valid. You know, we have no intention of ever breaching a contract if we could possibly avoid it. So, you know, we probably err on the side of caution. You know, having said that, we're able to do it because, you know, we do have a strong squad and, you know, we also have a strong development pathway. You know, if anything, we probably overproduce talent. And look, you know, as we fast forward into the future, it's not for now. But I think, you know, if you look at football, you know, there's a model there where it's okay to overproduce talent because you can actually monetize that. You know, we don't have that world in rugby. So, you know, if I was to look cynically at our development pathway, I might argue we do too much of it. You know, that doesn't sit well with me as a Scarlet, you know, because I want to produce as much talent as I possibly can, you know, for the world of rugby and for the Welsh team as possible. But look, I think, you know, these are things that as the world of rugby evolves, you know, there'll be new models around it. And it could be perfectly legitimate for another region, another club, you know, to decide we're not going to invest so much in development. We're just actually going to buy players out of somebody else's development pathway. And that may actually work for us as well. So these are some of the things that I think, you know, once we get through this crisis, and it is a significant crisis, you know, these are the things that I'd like to explore. You know, back to your question earlier about how do I feel about the start of the season? You know, the things that I outlined, those 3 points that I made, to me, those are all market inefficiencies. And I sound like a bit of an economist probably. But the reality is I think we can do a better job of running the game. And the reality is you never have enough money. So the trick is, you know, to maximize what you do with that money and maximize, you know, your return on your investment. So, you know, yes, you know, we need more money. You know, yes, we need to become, you know, more sustainable as a business. But I also think, you know, we need to become more efficient. And I think, you know, we need a, you know, a one team for Wales type approach to that. Right. And each club, each region could, you know, have a slightly different approach to what they do within that model. But I do think, you know, we have an opportunity to actually do a better job of coming together as, you know, four clubs, four regions, and thinking about the game more holistically.
I mean, there's so many fascinating points within there. I think the one I'd like to just drill a little bit deeper on is where you talk about the academies and production of talent. Because I guess on the one hand, could it be argued that, you know, we always talk about strength in depth, particularly in Wales, about, you know, the a couple of injuries and the squad is, you know, can be down to bare bones at a different club at a different time. But is what you're saying that you're always going to need seasoned professionals on top of that? You can't rely on just producing your own talent to kind of fill those holes, because it does seem like on the one hand you've got, yeah, injuries mean that it can make it tougher to compete, but at the same time you're saying that producing talent to fill those gaps is perhaps not the right route.
Yeah, I mean, we need a model that, you know, enables us to put the best team out on the field. And we could talk on this topic, you know, for hours. Right? It's fascinating. But, you know, to give you a couple of examples, you know, we don't seem to struggle, you know, spitting out quality number nines from West Wales. You know, we don't seem to struggle spitting out, you know, quality number sevens from West Wales. You know, do we produce people like Sione Calamifoli? You know, we don't, right? You know, my generation, you know, Scott Crennel was that type of player with that type of physicality. But, you know, we don't spit a lot of those out of West Wales. So, you know, we need a bit of a blended model. And, you know, I mean, if you look at, you know, Sione's job coming into the Scarlets, I mean, he's, you know, pulling up trees every time he plays. You know, he's phenomenal. But, you know, the boys love having him in the environment. He's looking after our youngster, Carwin, you know, who's got a bright, bright future ahead of him, who, you know, we'd like to think, you know, is going to play number eight for Wales one day and, you know, potentially, you know, even go beyond that. So, you know, Sione's got a job, which he's accepted. He's delivering epic performances on the field. And he's, you know, putting in a hell of a shift for us, you know, off the field in terms of our contributing to our environment. So, you know, that's a very, very positive story. And I don't think anyone can argue the value of bringing in players, you know, to fill that type of job description. You know, back to another point you made, which is about injuries. So, you know, one of the structural issues we have is, you know, the reality is, again, you can never have enough money. You can never have a big enough squad because you never know what's around the corner. But I think we have an opportunity to look holistically again across Wales, which is, you know, if we had a loan market, you know, maybe we all don't need to carry five players in each position, right? You know, we could look more holistically and more pragmatically, you know, in terms of, you know, how could we help each other out, you know, when we hit those unforeseen road bumps, which do happen, you know, I mean, you look at us in the second row this season, you know, we had Steve Cummins who, you know, we offloaded, you know, great, great player because we had, you know, real strength and depth in the second row. You know, then we had a couple of injuries and, you know, we're having to play, you know, 20-year-old boys in that position. Now, they did incredibly well, but that's risky. And what it also highlights too, and this year is an exception, but I think this is something we need to do a better job of. You know, we need a better second tier competition that those up and coming boys can get game time in. You know, that when we do have these crises or these opportunities prop up or they stick their head up, you know, we're able to grab them from there and slot them into the first team and they're able to seamlessly make that step up. So, for me, you know, there's a lot of opportunity around the structure, you know, the efficiencies of, you know, how we go about our business in the game of rugby. So, you know, I'm very excited about that because for me, I think those are things that give us an opportunity to really improve the game, you know, for all the clubs in Wales, all the pro clubs in Wales, as well as ultimately then, you know, feeding up into the national side.
You did mention there some the production of talent in the back row, particularly with regard to sevens. Now, there's a story broken today in the rugby paper that suggests that Jack Morgan, young bright talent, could be moving away from Llanelli. Is there anything you're able to share on that? Would you expect Jack to be a Scarlets player next season?
Yeah, I mean, I can't talk about, you know, specific you know, contractual discussions, you know, until they're done and dusted. You know, Jack is an incredible talent. You know, I've not spent any time with him. But, you know, feedback I get is, you know, he's a great individual too. So we'd love to see him, you know, in a Scarlets jersey. We're fortunate, you know, that we do have, real strength in that position within the squad. And clearly, players have to make decisions about, how much game time they believe they're going to get. And, the players within a particular squad that they exist in, who they effectively they compete against. I thought Josh McLeod had a great game last night. So I think we've got a good environment. I think, we can offer people like Jack, a great future, but ultimately, players are going to make, their own decisions.
And then finally, just to finish, we've mentioned there a couple of times about all the uncertainty and the doubt and over when rugby is going to resume and stuff. I just wanted to finish on how much are you looking forward to that day when we're able to welcome fans back into the ground and rugby as we know it will resume?
To be honest, it almost feels like I haven't really started the job yet, because I've not been able to experience that. I think the closest I got was our away game in Bath a couple of weeks before Christmas, where they had, I believe it was 3,500 people in the ground. And that was a great day out. Back to one of the topics we talked about earlier, walking up from the station with Scarlet's bobble hat on, people in the street, thanking me for coming down, wishing me luck, going into the ground, all of the Bath, folk that I met, were very, very gracious and, very happy to see us there. And it was a fantastic game of rugby, was it not?
Certainly was.
So, yeah, I mean, those are the days we live for, right? And ultimately, that's why we do this job, is to deliver those experiences. So, yeah, I mean, the sooner we can get back there, the better. Clearly a lot of it's outside of our control and, clearly, people up and down the country are, dealing with significant issues right now. So, I don't want to exacerbate those issues. We'll continue to exist as best as we can and, do our bit to support society's, path to, see a way through this current epidemic.
Well, Simon, it's been fascinating to chat to you. Really appreciate you you coming on and giving us your time on this Sunday evening. And all the best for the rest of the season. And hopefully chat to you again at some point soon.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. Have a good evening. Thank you.
So fascinating there to chat to Simon Mudrak, the exec chairman of the Scarlets, and delighted to say that I'm also joined on the show by Steph Thomas. How are you, Steph?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Yes, good, thanks. Lots of stuff to get through, really. And I don't know about you, but I certainly found that a lot more enjoyable weekend of rugby from an entertainment perspective than perhaps we'd been enjoying over Christmas.
Yeah, certainly. I think. Even the most diehard Welsh rugby fan would have struggled with the opening four derbies of the festive period. But yesterday wasn't perfect, but it was a breath of fresh air. You looked at the Cardiff Blues and Scarlets game. You know when you win penalties and you sort of automatically think they're going to go for territory. But Thomas Williams caught Scarlets out a few times. Taking a couple of quickly tapped penalties when their backs were turned and. It got the game moving a little bit faster. I thought the Ospreys game was quite a decent contest as well. Neither game was up to the same standard as the Bath against Wasps game on Friday night, but two watchable games. I think that's probably the best way I describe it.
Oh, you've had a couple of people suggest as well that perhaps that game between Bath and Wasps was. Perhaps a bit of a reason for a change in mindset. Do you think there's anything in that players would have been aware of the fact that a game with that much excitement has taken place and they want to go out and play a bit more? Or do you think that's kind of purely coincidental?
Not really sure. I suppose only the players can answer that. I think the players would have certainly been aware of the criticism on in the press and on social media about the the standard of the first two weekends of derbies. You know, let's not beat around the bush. It was pretty dire stuff from an entertainment perspective. Anyway, so I think they'd have been aware of that. I think from a Cardiff Blues perspective, I think they obviously played the best rugby, didn't they? You could tell they were really revitalised. They had a purpose about them. Obviously, Mulvihill has gone. No slight on him, but obviously David Young is in the crowd. Not that there was a crowd, but, you know, he's in the stands. New director of rugby, so they really wanted to impress him. So it was a bit of a trial, I suppose. And look at the halfbacks, Thomas Williams and Jared Evans. They were wonderful, weren't they? Thomas, you know, catching the Scarlets out a few times with his you know, quick thinking, quick taps. Jared, you know, he was a magician on the field on Saturday night. I don't think I've seen Jared play like that since. I don't know. I think since the season they won the Challenge Cup, you know, when Gareth Anscombe was playing full back. So I don't think they would have taken much notice of the Bath Wasps game, but I think they would have been acutely aware of the criticism surrounding the first 2 weekend of derbies.
Yeah, it felt there was something quite strange about knowing that Dai Young's going to be in charge of Cardiff again, and the game being taking place at Cardiff City Stadium. It all felt a little bit. Felt a little bit 2010, but yeah. You know, I was expecting Sam Norton Knight to pop up at one point, but it was
hopefully not.
Yeah, well, that might have dampened the quality a bit, poor old Sam. But it was a cracking game of rugby, and as you say, I think the certainly a lot more enjoyable rugby across the weekend as a whole. We've got loads of listeners' questions, and I'm keen to kind of get stuck into a few of these, Steph, as well. Just want to build on what you were saying there. This question has come from Diego Von Albatross, who I can only presume is using his real name. What made the weekend's rugby entertaining compared with last week's dross? Weather, players, mentality. I think we've spoken about the mentality a bit. Do you think things like weather do play that much of an impact? I know they can, but what are your thoughts on that?
I suppose we'd be a bit naive if we thought that the, you know, wet and windy because conditions didn't play a part in the type of game they played. I suppose I touched on in my previous answer. I think the players would have been aware of how poor the first, you know, two weekends of derbies were. You know, Cardiff had an edge, obviously, because they, you know, they wanted to play for the and impress the new director of rugby. So I think that had something to do with it. But I can't remember the actual stat. I should have written it down, but I read a remarkable stat the other day comparing the amount of kick returns in the Gaelic Premiership to the Welsh Derbies and the Pro 12 as there is at the moment. And again, I haven't got the actual figures. I should have written them down, but they were considerably higher in the Premiership to the Pro 12. You know, I was at the Scarlet Dragons game New Year's Day, and God alive, it was dreadful stuff. There was no way to dress that up. It was awful. It was just kick tennis, and it wasn't just the fact that they were kicking. It was poor kicking as well.
Shameless, wasn't it?
Like the All Blacks, for example, kick more than any other team in world rugby, but it's creative kicking, isn't it? It's they kick for a purpose, but there really wasn't in that game any purpose of the kicking in that game. But in the Cardiff Blue Scarlets game, you know, Cardiff were running the ball back a lot more. The Ospreys did it as well. You know, first 10 minutes of the game, you know, Luke Morgan made a couple of breaks, returning kicks. Prothro was just deadly. He's been a great signing. And North as well, you know, he's getting back to his best. So, you know, I'm not saying that you have to run out on the counter track every time, because sometimes it's the wrong decision because you can run into trouble. But and sometimes you have to kick. But it's almost in the first 2 weekends, it's almost as if it was programmed in their head like they were robots. You know, you have to kick. If this happens, you have to kick. Don't worry about what's in front of you. Just you have to do this. But there seemed to be a bit more freedom, especially with the Cardiff Blues players. So, yeah, hopefully they took a little bit of notice of the criticism they had on the first 2 weekends of derbies.
Obviously, we need to talk more really about the John Mulvihill moving on and Dai Young coming back, because this has been a massive news story within rugby this week. What are your thoughts on the appointment of Dai Young? Personally, I think that's a great coup for Cardiff Blues.
I think so as well. You know, there is an old saying: "Don't go back, never go back." But you know, I don't really think we should take that as gospel. I think it depends on the individual case, doesn't it? And for me, I can't really see them attracting a better coach than Dai Young on their playing budget. I know he's a director of rugby, not technically a coach at the moment, but I think the prospect of Dai Young as director of rugby, you know, you look at what he did the first time at Cardiff, and let's be honest, it wasn't all rosy in his first stint. You know, he was very inexperienced when he originally took the role, and there were a couple of seasons where they were dreadful under him. But he grew and grew as a coach, you know, recruited really wisely. And by the end of it, they were desperate to keep him. You know, and he had all manner of English clubs bidding for his services. You know, should have made an Heineken Cup final. If it won that shootout, might have won it. Who knows? You know, won the Challenge Cup. People will say it's a second tier competition, but they beat a full strength Toulon, Sonny Bill Williams, you know, Johnny Wilkinson, Joey Van Niekerk, it's Lawby, etc., in front of 60,000 fans in Marseille. Basically, a Heineken Cup game and everything but name. You know, won the Anglo-Welsh. So he's been a successful coach, fantastic at Wasps as well. I think at Wasps, it went a bit stale, his shelf life had ended, but, you know, he's a high-caliber coach. And I think with Dwayne Peel coming in as head coach, by all accounts, one of the best coaching prospects in the UK to learn off Dai. I honestly don't think they could have made any better appointments on their playing budget. So he understands the club as well. Obviously, the problem he's got is the game has moved on financially, so they haven't got the same financial clout they used to have. So there is that. I don't think you can expect miracles, but certainly, I think they've hit the jackpot, if I'm being honest.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, we looked at the appointment of John Mulville 3 years ago, and it felt like it was something of a last-minute appointment, and, you know, it certainly had the air of that. And, I don't think he's done a terrible job, but by any stretch of the imagination. But at the same time, to look at it, I think, despite it's been a bit of a, it's probably not been handled particularly well from a PR perspective, the fact that they've acted quickly and secured the services of, you know, of an excellent coach and someone who knows the club inside out as well, you know, I think you have to say that there's a degree of praise that they deserve for doing that. So yeah, I think hitting the jackpot's probably the right way of putting it. Let's move on and take a couple more questions. This one's from Ian Alexander. What further punishment will Liam Williams face for his comments to the referee as he left the pitch last night?
Answer to that is I don't know, but I think he should face further punishment. I just think he was an accident waiting to happen, wasn't he? Let's not beat around the bush. He's a fantastic player. I'm not saying he's a dirty player. He's had a bad game, you know, and he probably learned from it. But, you know, that was a reckless act, wasn't it? I'm not saying it's the worst thing I've ever seen. I'm not going to go over the top, but letter of the law says, you know, any contact to the head with force, direct to the head, no mitigating circumstances, the ref had no choice whatsoever, it was a red card offence. And they didn't have... What I don't understand is, I don't understand what he was trying to achieve either, because they'd won the penalty, there was nothing to be gained. So, yeah, I think it's really poor. But, yeah, I think the comments to the ref, again, you know, he's really annoyed, heat of the moment stuff. He probably, you know, would disagree with what he's saying if he listened to himself now. But given what, you know, what's been in the press recently, with the likes of Alex Popham, Steve Thompson, and many other players suffering from horrific, you know, after effects of concussion, it's a very it's a very poor comment, wasn't it? And I like Liam, but I don't think he can have much complaint if he does get a longer ban for those comments.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right there. Looking at some of the exciting rugby that was played there, this one's come from John Lewis. Jared Evans, arguably one of the best attacking tens, it says in the Northern Hemisphere. I mean, that's a big statement there. But how far is he off having the all-round game to be the number 10 for Wales?
I think he's a little way off, if I'm being honest. I think yesterday was, you know, I think he was magnificent yesterday. As I said, I think it's probably the best I've seen him play since, you know, that season where they won the Challenge Cup. I think it was about, what was it, 4 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago. He's such a gifted player. He's a wonderful ball player, real threat with ball in hand. Got, you know, makes lovely breaks, got a lot of vision as well. But in too many games, yesterday was man of the match performance. Personally, I thought both of them was man of the match. If I was choosing, he would have had it. But Jared was excellent. But if you look at his performance throughout the whole season and last season, and even going back to that season where they won the Challenge Cup, Jared played 10, but Anscombe was coaching him throughout the game. Anscombe was the one calling the shots from 15. You go back to watch that game in Bilbao, second half, Anscombe is playing full back, but he's standing a first receiver for almost half the second half. You know, so Jared is still learning. I think his kicking game isn't good enough. I don't think his game management is international class. I think it's one of the worst kept secrets in rugby that, you know, he's one of the most gifted players in Wales. He has the ability to play international rugby at a high level. But until he sorts his kicking game out, I don't mean his goal kicking. He's a good goal kicker. I mean, you know, when to kick, you know, when not to kick, and his game management. When the Cardiff are under pressure, he goes missing. Forget, he's wonderful on the front foot. But when they're under pressure, he goes missing. And until he sorts that out, he's not an international class player. He has the ability. He's a more talented player than Callum Sheedy, for example. But Sheedy knows when to kick, when to pass, when to run. He can control a game, and he's got excellent game management. Until he learns that aspect, adds that aspect to his game, then unless there's a lot of injuries, he's not going to play for Wales. He's got the ability, but at the moment, a lot of work to do, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, I think that to go back to the point you made about the season where they won the European Challenge Cup, I think you'd expect that at the point he was, like you say, it was 3 years ago, nearly 4 years ago. So he would have been, what, 20, 21 at the time. And you've got Gareth Anscombe, who's a much more experienced 10 in the setup. So I think, you know, having that dovetail of 10, 15 made perfect sense. But you're absolutely right. Those games where you show the ability to control and to get your team out of trouble is what's needed at international level. I do think he's starting to show the importance that he has on that Cardiff side now a lot more. And again, I think with the new coaching structure, that will definitely help, because you've got a gifted backs coach in Dwayne Peel, who I think will be able to get more out of him. But you've also got that the director of rugby in Diane adding that level of structure and actual direction to the team and to the club as a whole. So I think we'll see more from him. If there were to be a Six Nations in February, March, which at the moment feels more and more hypothetical, for me, I would have him in the squad. And if it was a normal season, I would have, if you're not going to feature him in the 23, I would have him back to Cardiff to make sure he's not missing out on the game time. But I don't think that's, I think we're dealing with a lot of hypotheticals at the moment.
But you, so obviously it's not been confirmed yet, but it looks likely that they are going to sign or have signed Rhys Priestland. If you pick Cardiff's best team next year, it's not even a contest, it's Priestland all day long. And
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure. I think it's I'm a big fan of Priestland's ability. I think he's done a brilliant job.
I think he's a different level of player to Evans myself. Evans is younger, and I think Priestland will help to mentor him. So I think it's fantastic there. Obviously, look, Priestland's 34, so short-term signing, obviously. Jared's long-term, you'd hope. And I think Jared will, I hope he will develop into that level of player. But on Priestland, I'm going to open a can of worms now. So
that's why we get you on, Steph.
Yeah. So basically, right, look, the Six Nations probably won't go ahead as planned, but hypothetically, if it did, Pivac has a breakout clause in his contract. The narrative is, let's build to the World Cup. So you would pick Jared ahead of him, and you pick Sheedy in that case. Maybe Owen Lloyd, but Pivac needs results. I just find that there's too much emphasis on the World Cup. Sometimes this is just an excuse to hide behind. It can become at times. So if Pivac needs results, doesn't he? And if you were to pick Wales' best team, you'd argue bigger as a 10. But there is an argument that Rhys Priestland should play 10 for Wales. Now, he's only got 50 caps, so technically he's ineligible. But if he signs for Cardiff, or if he has already signed, my sources say that he's 100% going to be there next year. So when Reece Webb had signed for, he was playing for Toulon, but had signed for the Ospreys.
Yeah, he was back.
Yeah, so the PRB took a vote and they allowed him to come back and they set the precedent. So that could happen with Priestland. Now, obviously, if Pivac's looking to the World Cup, you don't pick him. But I think Pivac desperately, desperately needs results. And if you have an inexperienced halfback pairing or inexperienced 10, you know, you're risking it a bit. You know, you are. So it's going to be interesting to see if he does turn to Priestland, because he's his type of 10 as well, isn't he? So that's Six Nations probably won't happen, so it's probably irrelevant. But I think that's an interesting story that could unfold over the next 6 months or so.
You're absolutely right. He needs results. I think that with that in mind, I still think the big is the most reliable 10 to go to. Yeah, you know, for all those reasons we've said, you know, if you can get front football, then everyone's delighted to have Jared Evans or Reece Priestland at 10. But and you're right, it is an excuse often building towards the World Cup. And I think that, yes, he might be able to offer some more results, but is he, you know, he's played brilliant rugby really since he's been at Bath. But would you say that the form is so spectacular that it ousts Sheedy and Bigger and Jared Evans? I don't know. I think it's quite a close call, but yeah. And as you say, you know, I think the likelihood of that tournament taking place is slim. But yeah, it's a fascinating one. I think it's a great signing for Cardiff. I think it's really good, because again, you know, like you say, there, it's hype when you're talking about when the best when they go to pick their best side. You could very easily slot Priestland in at 15 and have him do exactly the same role that Anscombe was doing for Jared Evans in 2017.
Well, he played fullback for the Scarlets, and Stephen Jones was 10. This was in his younger days. Obviously, he had a bit more pace then, but he can play 15. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and you know, as you know, how often do you get the opportunity to pick your side where you've got all your players available? It's very, very slim. And we've seen when Jared Evans isn't available for Cardiff, they struggle with Tavi at 10. You know, they do. The results and the performances show that. And so having someone of Priestland's class to come in bolsters the squad. So, yeah, good business all round, I think. Right, let's take another question. Gareth Thorne-Jones got in touch and said, will the Six Nations happen? I think we're both of the same opinion on that one. We've spoken about 10s. Let's have a chat about 9. I know we've spoken about Harry Randall before. This one's from Lewis Eldred. Wales has an abundance of choice at 9 at the moment. How much would you like to see him get a call up, Harry Randall? I know we have spoken about this before, Steph. You think he's much more inclined to play for England?
Well, the only person who can answer that is Harry Randall himself. But from listening to his interviews, you know, I think it was the Mail, but a month back, and he basically said, look, I'm really proud of some of my Welsh background. I think he said the fact he's brought up in Wales and he's really passionate about Wales as well, but ultimately he considers himself English. His parents are English and he's always wanted to play for England, and good luck to him. So I would be surprised if he played for Wales. That's not to say it's impossible. I mean, if Eddie Jones doesn't pick him, maybe he wants a bigger scrum half, and then Pivac or whoever coaches Wales catches him at the right time, could get lucky. You don't know, do you? But I would be surprised. He's a fine player. He'd be an asset to Wales, but yeah, I think he'd likely plump for England.
Okay, let's move back to club rugby again. Obviously, we said a disappointing result for Scarlets last night. This one's from Sean Thomas. Why do you think the Scarlets star-studded backline isn't firing?
$1 million question, isn't it? You look at their backline on paper. God, it's one of the best backlines in Europe, I would have thought. You know, you look at our team yesterday, you know, two test lines in the back three. Steph Evans, very good player. Foxy's, Jonathan Davis has been world class. Johnny Williams, good player. Halfbacks, decent. Personally, nothing against Dan Jones, but I think they're really missing Patchell. You've just got so much more potential when you've got Patchell at 10. I think Jones, you know, he's a good kicking out of hand. I don't think his defence is great, if I'm being honest. But on the whole, he's solid. But Patchell is a different league, isn't he? He's got so much. He's a big man. He's got so much pace. He just gives you that different dimension. His passing is outstanding. He's got a lot of vision. bit brittle in defence himself, maybe, but he just adds so much spark to a back division. So that's a reason, one of the reasons. Also, you know, I just look at them and I think they've got a pretty decent pack. If I'm not saying they got Clermont to Toulon level pack, but they got a good pack, you know.
Oh, it's a huge pack, isn't it?
It is.
Like, it's massive.
You look at that back five of the pack. Look at the two locks, Sam Lousy, Tevita Rotuvas. He's huge. Callum Mahoney, huge. McLeod's a big boy as well. Blade Thompson's a big boy as well. You know, that's a mass. That was a significantly bigger back five in comparison to Cardiff's, but they were outgunned. But the point I'm making is they've got a platform. It's not like in the past where they've had great backs, but they haven't had the ball. They've got a platform. Now, there are areas of the game which are good. The scrum is pretty good. The pack is decent. Got a lot of carriers in their pack. But they don't create much, do they? You know what they're going to do. Johnny Williams or Steph Hughes is going to truck it up. They're going to go through a few phases. Steph Evans might pop up at first receiver to try and create something. And then they'll run out of ideas and Dan Jones will put boot to ball. And I do think that the attack coaches have got to take some responsibility for that. You know, it's collective effort. I don't know what's going on in camp. Obviously, I'm just a journalist, I'm not a coach. So I respect that. But, you know, you look at the calibre of playing in that back line and you look at the platform they've got. I don't think their attacking performance has been good enough. And I think they've won a lot of games because they've got very, very good individual players. But as a unit, I think they need to be a lot better in coming seasons if they want a chance of silverware. And look at their squad, and they should be in the quarterfinals and semi-finals of competition, certainly the Pro 16 as it's going to be. So I think they, you know, I don't think their back play has been good enough.
And then you mentioned that. I think you're right. They certainly miss Patcher. A lot of people getting very excited about Sam Costello, but he's very inexperienced, isn't he? Do you think he's kind of too green to throw into some of these games, or could that be an opportunity if they, you know, if we end up with a couple of friendlies over the next few weeks, could that be a good opportunity for him to get some more game time under his belt?
So one point before I go on to that, I was going to make as well. If you want to play a direct game, and they do look like they want to play a pretty direct game, obviously they've got Johnny Williams there, Foxy's, you know, tidy carrier as well, but they probably need a bit more oomph in the back three as well. If you're going to go down that route, you need big men. You need like a Semiran Dradras. Never going to afford him, but that type of sort of
Sean Lamont.
Yeah, Sean Lamont. But when he played, they didn't have a pack. So, but that type of player. So that if they're going to go down that route, I don't think they should. But that's probably the type of player they need. But I think you've got to be careful when you're trying to push through a 10 like that. He's a fantastic prospect. What I like about Costello is I've watched him play age grade and he's very talented, but he's brave in defence. Obviously, if Carl Mahoney runs down his channel, it's just physics and he's going to get knocked off. But what I like about him as well is game management is very good. You know, obviously, he's younger and less experienced, but if you compare him to Jared Evans, obviously, look, Costello hasn't had a chance to do it at pro level, but his problem solving is a lot better. For when I watched him play for Wales 20s and some age grade games for Leicester and Ampdil, when they're under pressure and things don't go their way, he gets them out of trouble. He's a real thinking player. So I think he's a fantastic prospect. I'd like to see him use a little bit more. I think probably the idea of having him on the bench, coming off the bench last 20 minutes or so, rather than just chucking him to the Wolves from the start, is probably sensible. But I would agree that maybe he hasn't played enough, because I think he's I think his ceiling is really high, and I think he's a future Welsh international, injury permitting. I'd be stunned if he didn't win 30, 40, 50 caps for it, if not more.
Let's have a look at the other game, which is Dragons Ospreys, and we've had this question in from Rugby 24/7. Good result for the Ospreys, but what has happened to the Dragons? They appear to be on a downward trajectory again. Would you agree with that?
No, I wouldn't. You know, their playing budget is what was it, £4.7 million, £4.8 million. They're ravaged by injuries. Well, what do you expect? You know, how can you expect the Dragons to compete to sides that have playing budgets 4, 5, 6 million more than them, if not more in some cases? They're the poor relations they're poor in comparison to the other Welsh teams, let alone, you know, your Irish and French, etc. And they've got injuries on top of that. I think Dean Ryan has just been a godsend for them. I think he's made them, they had no right to be as close as they were to the Ospreys yesterday. The Ospreys, they're a work in progress themselves, right? They were very confident. You know, they went ahead, early doors, the couple of breaks, etc. In the past, no doubt, 40-50 point win for the Ospreys. But Ryan has made them a difficult team to beat again. If you beat the Dragons, you've got to do the hard way. And you look at their... With the Scarlets, they should be doing better, as we just said, just listed their backline. With the Dragons, you look at their team and you think, should they be beating the Ospreys? Should they be beating the Scarlets? Definitely not. Absolutely not. But, you know, they could have won yesterday. You know, they got the real grafters. They fight until the end. But the fact of the matter is, until their playing budget is significantly increased, you know, they're not going to be able to do anything. There's no point, you know, you cannot expect a team on their playing budget, with injuries on top of it especially, to be beating teams with £3-5 million more than them. Absolutely not. They're as good as they should be at the moment. And that's it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think just obviously check my opinion onto that quickly. I definitely agree that they're not on a downward trajectory. I think that, again, for all the reasons you've outlined there, injury, the performances that they put in, I think I said this, you know, a couple of weeks ago, to turn out in those European games with second, third string Dragon sides. And yes, you know, the scorelines weren't pretty, but at the same time, to be competitive for large chunks of the game is good. I think the thing that is a little frustrating is that you're right, the playing budget is the major factor for why we're not able to consistently go out and get results. But I think once you're in those games, and I look back, you know, I think the game at home to Cardiff over Christmas, there was a win there to be had, and that I think would have been a massive win in terms of morale. You're right, again, that team on paper last night, with a team that's shorn of, you know, of someone like Ollie Griffiths, who's the pure, you know, pure absolute class in that side. No Tane Basham in there, you know, we said before, you know, a front five that has lacked power in the past. To go out there and run them close is great, but I think when you're in those games, it's just having the ability to kind of get over the line. But I think they're moving in the right direction. I still do, and you're right. The driving force behind that is Dean Ryan, and I think you look at how some of the players have improved. I mean, Harry Keddie's playing so well at the moment. He's been a real step up in terms of his performance. It's helped that he stayed injury clear, but you can see that the level that Dean Ryan holds him in, because he's made him captain. You know, he could have very easily given the armband to Roberts again last night, but he obviously thinks he's the kind of player who's going to be very, very important to the Dragons over the next couple of years. So I certainly don't think they're on a downward trajectory.
No, and I think Ryan has said in a few interviews that Harrison Caird, he's just been outstanding. He's, as you said, he's a captain. I could see him being captain long term. I think his on-field performances have been excellent as well. I think he's been a real positive point for them.
Okay, let us move on. Let's have a chat about the Ospreys now, and one player in particular. This one is from the Dragon Thistle Rugby Pod, which I've not had a chance to listen to yet. Does Adam Beard deserve to be back in the Wales squad, especially given Jake Ball's injury?
He's going to be there by default, isn't he? Because if Rowlands is out, or a doubt, if Ball is out, Arlen wins out for the first few games, he's going to have to be there, isn't he? Mm-hmm. I think he does deserve to be there, though, personally. I think he's, he brings a level of physicality. He's excellent in terms of his maul defence. I think he's the best in Wales at that. I think that's something we missed. The maul defence is atrocious in the autumn, so I think that's a benefit. So I think he'll definitely be there. Interesting. I think there might be a couple of white, if there is a Six Nations, there might be some wild cards at lock. And I think he'll definitely be there, as I've said. They will carry. They probably will pick Jake Ball if he's injured, if there's any chance, and Arlen Wynn. But Morgan Jones, the Scarlet's lock, and Ben Carter from the Dragons, they're future internationals for sure. Maybe not ready for Test rugby, but I don't see what choice they've got, if I'm being honest. But to answer the question, I think Beard will be there, and I think he does deserve to be there as well.
Yeah, I think, you've hit all the
and Reece Davis from the Ospreys, he's playing well as well.
Yeah, he's been a good signing, hasn't he? I think, you know, we mentioned recruitment in the first half with relation to the Scarlets, but I think that some of those Ospreys players are settling in very well. You mentioned Matt Prothero at fullback. I mean, he's a very, very gifted player, and that's been a great signing. I think players like Reece Davis, you know, if you're able to get him back to Wales, he just adds some grunt and some physicality, which has definitely been needed. And I think those signings have been good. And another one, you know, looking at Stephen Myler coming into the side, you know, and you thought, well, he's not the most exciting of signings, especially at the age he is, but he's been fantastic. He's been absolutely superb, giving them some structure, giving them level-headed decision-making at times. I think he's been, you know, he's been a really good stopgap for them, you know, while they try and nurture through some of the, you know, some of the younger talents, or, you know, Anscombe comes back to fitness.
Absolutely. I think he's neck and neck, isn't he, with Sione Calamifornia's best regional signing. Not the most exciting player, but he's just so experienced, such a good mentor of younger players. Game management is excellent. You know, great goal kicking, just does the right things. Clearly a stopgap, clearly short term. But I think he's been a real shrewd acquisition by Toby Booth. And if we're on the Six Nations beat, you want a wild card. I think Ivan Phillips, the hooker's got to have a look in, hasn't he?
He's in the squad for me, Steph. There's no Ken Owens.
Yeah.
I think he's got so much ability, and he's an X Factor player. You know, he's explosive ball carrier. It's very hard to judge a hooker on their, you know, on line outs and stuff like that. Because it is a collective effort, but his darts seem pretty good, and you know it can be a bit of a terror over the ball. So he's going to be in Wales squads going forward. I know lots made about Henry Lake, and who again is another excellent prospect. But I think right now Phillips looks like the pace about him as well. Actually, he's got a real turn of pace. Like it's a bit like Cronin, the Irish hooker who I just think he was a. I think if Cronin's one of those players, if he was another nationality, I think he'd have a hell of a lot more caps, because he was just offered something so different. And I think Phillips in the same mould.
I think Ken is likely to be back for the Six Nations, which would be a boost. But Ken Owens is still the best Welsh hooker by country mile, but he is 34 at the end of the day. So I think they do need contingency plans. I think Ryan Elias came in for unfair criticism. I don't think the line-out failings were all his fault, and I think he's played well for Scarlett. I like Elliot D as well. Parry solid, but Phillips has got, he's got a point of difference, hasn't he? You know, he's solid, but he's, you know, he came off the bench against the Scarlett in that game, and he floored three players with his explosive ball card, and he's got a real turn of pace. And I like Sam Parry, but I think Pivak's got to pick one hooker who he thinks can usurp Ken, because realistically, you want Owens to be usurped, don't you? You want him to be knocked out of the team by a younger player, because you don't want him retiring at the top of his game and then you're suddenly looking left, right and centre for his replacement. And I think he needs to look at him. In terms of Dewi Lake, phenomenal carrier, huge size, great at the breakdown, can't throw in. You know, I know it's a collective effort, but in the game against the Scarlets, I'm sure the ref was leaving go some of the not, just ignoring some of the not straights. They were so blatant, and he's doing it all the time. And until he can throw in properly, it's pointless debating whether he should be in the squad. But if he can throw in, he could be world class. But for the time being, I think even Phillips is really knocking on the door. I think he's been outstanding for the Ospreys.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with that. Right, let's finish on this one from Greg Sherrington. Lions tour options. So working on the basis that 2021 is off, what would be your preferred kind of solution? Would it be to move to summer 2022, autumn of this year, autumn of next year, UK only, UK rather than South Africa? What would be your preferred solution, Steph?
My preferred solution would be just to play next summer and just have exactly as it should be, as it was planned. But reality is, you know, the home nations will say we've already planned our tours, World Cup preparation, and I understand that. But they also benefit financially from the Lions. I'm not that keen on it being played in the UK. I think the Lions are tourists. I don't mind them playing the odd game in the UK, like they're doing against Japan and they did against Argentina in 2005. But I think in the main that they are tourists, and I would like to see the Six Nations played in the summer, where there is more of a chance of crowds, even if it's not full of crowds, even if it's just 10,000 or something. It's been nothing, isn't it? So I'd like to see that, and then just the Lions postponed to next summer. So that would be my preferred choice. But whether they agree on that, I don't know.
I think if you were, yeah, if you're looking at what the right answer is in terms of what's right for the sport, I guess I think that is the right solution. Look, the Lions are tourists. That's part of what makes it special. Yeah. Is that you're away from home. I think that to kind of leave South Africa in the lurch over it, you know, it's not like this country has been COVID free, has it? It's, you know, the three home nations that are part of the UK plus Northern Ireland, right, has had a horrific time with this disease. And so, you know, if there was a degree of solidarity, I think it would be bad form to, you know, to pull the ladder up from South Africa, who would benefit massively from the tour. And yeah, it gives you an opportunity to move the Six Nations to the summer and experiment with what that might look like. And that to me is the right answer. I know it makes things more crowded towards Rugby World Cup, but I think that, you know, everything's going to be crowded now. You know, everything is going to be crowded. And that's something that, again, that has to be looked at. But it's whether or not you can park self-interest, and history would tell us that you can't.
Well, the home unions would have to get some out of it financially on an individual basis when they money talks. That's the be all and end all, isn't it, really? So I in full agreement with you. I think that should be the solution, but whether it will be or not, I really don't know.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. And it feels like a bit of a downer to finish on, but it's been a really really interesting show tonight. So big thanks to you, Steph, for joining us. A big thanks to Simon Murek for joining us in the first half as well. Really, really interesting stuff. And Steph, thank you for sorting that for us. And as always, big thanks to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. We also generally encourage people to leave us a review on iTunes, which we've had one in this week, which just simply says, great long form podcast. So thank you very much for that. That one's come from Arthur Dark down the Arms Park. So thank you for that, whoever you are and whatever your real name may be. But yeah, if you enjoy listening to the show, then please make sure you do the same thing for us. And whether or not there's any rugby in the forthcoming weeks, we will be around to still chat about what's going on off the pitch. So yeah, once again, thanks for listening, and we'll be back to chat rugby with you very, very soon.
Podcast Network.